Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:41 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is April 19th, and I thought we'd kick off with 10-year Treasury yields. It's another day, another almost 10 basis point move on the upside. So we're approaching 3%, and that's a potential area of resistance, or I guess support, if we're going to be more correct about where what it represents for prices. And we've had an extraordinary move over the last 10 weeks, and the yield has doubled this year, and we're still only in April. Back in 2018, this was the big Rubicon, and back then people were willing to bet that it was the end of the bond bull market. Since then, the quantity of debt outstanding has increased by 25%. So not only do we have more debt outstanding, we've had a swifter move in yields coming from a lower base, and this has been an exceptionally rapid sell-off. And it's created carnage in the fixed income world, because anyone running a bond portfolio is losing money hand over fist, and they don't have a choice. They either have to go to cash to the greatest extent possible, or they have to hold exceptionally short-dated instruments. So when we look at that massive acceleration that we've had in the 10-year, well, we have to contrast it with the muted environment that we've had on the 3-month. We're still only at about 80 basis points, and it's moved higher in the last 3 weeks, but not nearly at the same pace that we've seen from the 10-year. What I find rather interesting right now is that the 20-year, for whatever reason, now has a higher yield than the 30-year. It's well in excess of 3%. The 30-year is around the 3% level. The 10-year is at 2.93%. So we've got a very, very flat yield curve between maturities of approximately 3 years and 30 years, and then the shorter end of the curve has got a lot of catching up to do. Well, against this background, where we continue to see yields pushing higher, the Nasdaq was in positive territory today. At one point, it was up 2%. So there's certainly a buy the dip mentality, and I think it's also worth highlighting here that we have an evolving inverse head and shoulders pattern on the Nasdaq. If this level around 14,000 continues to hold, well, then we have the second shoulder starting to manifest itself, and that suggests that there is the potential for a bounce. And that was why I introduced a stop on my short position in here today. But how high can risk assets rally when bond yields continue to move in such an abrupt manner higher? And that suggests that any short covering is likely to be relatively short-lived, but doesn't mean that it can't happen. When we think about European stock markets, then we had a fair bit of volatility in here today, but they finished on the upper side of the day. So also beginning to demonstrate some support coming through. So it wasn't continued fear about the sell-off in bonds that created this. It was more because the renminbi is starting to weaken. The big outstanding question has been, when is China going to start stepping on the accelerator in terms of supporting the economy? They've been reticent to do that for the last 6 months. They're wedded to their zero COVID policy, and this isn't going to change anytime soon. The last thing that the Communist Party is going to do is to admit they're wrong when we're only about 5 months away from the big leadership contest. And to the extent that it's a contest at all, let's be honest about it, it's not like there's anyone going to be standing for election. But certainly, the Xi administration is going to want to come across as strong, and they're touting their success in keeping the coronavirus under control, despite the fact that there are several hundred thousand cases of the virus have been reported in Shanghai over the last few weeks. Because when you start reporting numbers in the region of 13,000 a day, they don't be long adding up. Some portions of the economy still remain reasonably resilient, not least manufacturing, but consumer demand is ebbing quickly. And we've seen that the housing market continues to slow, and we're on the cusp now of prices actually declining. They've only, what we've really seen so far over the last year has been the pace of growth moderating, but now prices are actually starting to deteriorate. So that is putting pressure on the administration to try and stimulate. Now, interbank rates in China are starting to come back down. So that might be considered shadow stimulus. But more importantly, the stock market hasn't really started to move, but the currency has. So if the currency continues to devalue, that will be one of the clear barometers that the market's looking for to suggest that China is in fact beginning to stimulate. And capital is global and mobile. So we have China beginning to stimulate. And Japan remains very clear in its determination not to rein in stimulus. So the yen continues to depreciate, and it's now at a new low. And we've haven't seen the yen at lows like this in an awfully long time. So we can just zoom out and look at the fact that the yen hasn't been this weak since 2001. And even then, it didn't hold for very long. So, what this is definitely doing is stimulating the Japanese economy. It's creating inflation. Importing commodities is going to become progressively more expensive the weaker the currency gets. But exports are going to become progressively more attractive. And that's an additional reason why China might be thinking about devaluing their currency, because the yen is breaking down against everything. So, when we think then about the cross rates in the region, the yen or the renminbi is breaking out against the yen, hasn't been this high since 2015. What I thought was very interesting is the commonality that we have between the Korean won yen cross rate and the euro yen cross rate. And in both cases, we have a very similar chart pattern, but the yen is rapidly depreciating against both of them, despite the fact that the euro hasn't exactly been a tower of strength against the US dollar either. So we've got the foundations for competitive currency devaluation. Well, with some risk appetite for stocks returning in here today, gold took a bit of a hit. It got all the way up to test the psychological $2,000 level yesterday and then failed to hold that move. So we've seen a $50 pullback in the space of about 24 hours. And now the big question is, will it continue to find support above this $1,900 area? I suspect that it will. I don't believe that we're going to move back into a clear risk-on environment until central banks relent from their promises to raise interest rates in an aggressive manner. We also saw today that oil prices are starting to come back down. Well, there is another way of thinking about the stock market rally that we are beginning to see in here today. And it is that oil prices are starting to come back down, so some of the inflationary measures will moderate. If global growth falters, then the determination to raise interest rates will be less acute, and therefore stocks could potentially rebound from here. And this is a lower rally high for oil prices. So this is a second lower rally high. Now the $100 area continues to hold, but there's a downward bias to trading now, and it's been in evidence for 6 weeks. If the $100 area fails, well, then that's going to certainly highlight that global growth is slowing down, and I don't think there's any question of that. And that, of course, will have an impact on inflationary expectations and therefore central bank tightening goals. So that's a sufficient reason for people to at least think about covering shorts. So I think that's pretty much where we are right now. We also saw in here today that natural gas prices, having surged up to $8 yesterday, had pulled back today by almost 10%. So this is a peak of at least short-term significance. And there's the potential here that we're going to see some consolidation. We've had the breakout from the base formation. So now it's at the big question will be whether it can hold this breakout. And of course, natural gas is rallying because supply hasn't been keeping up with demand, and demand has been surging because of the war in Ukraine and the demand for LNG cargoes. So, export facilities are likely to do well. I also think it's quite likely that over the course of the next year or two, we're going to see an increasingly globally fungible price for natural gas. The more export facilities we have, and the more LNG tankers that are plying the seas, then the chances are that we're going to see a leveling off of the big disparities and arbitrages between the different regions and consumption for natural gas globally. When we then think about where are we in terms of some of these commodities? Well, orange juice had been surging on the upside and then started to come back down in a very dynamic manner in here today. So that suggests a peak of at least near-term significance. Now we can also think about corn. The Biden administration have announced that they're going to allow more ethanol in gasoline, and that's they're attempting to try and bring down the price of gasoline, and so far it's worked. Of course, it's also creating demand for corn, so it's pushing up the price of a key foodstuff. One of the big challenges for increasing supply of agricultural commodities is fertilizer prices, which are at very high levels. But we've seen a big move on the upside for most of the agricultural commodities, and they are now starting to come back down. So we've had meaningful moves, and now we're seeing downward dynamics. So these are peaks of at least near-term significance. And Arabica coffee, having surged higher, is now losing uptrend consistency. It bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average, put in a downside key reversal last week, and followed through on the downside this week. It would suggest that this is a peak of perhaps more than short-term significance, potentially medium-term significance. So some of the upward pressure that we've seen in commodity prices is starting to roll over. Global growth moderating should certainly start to weigh on some of these commodity prices. Then, of course, the dollar is the strongest fiat currency in the world at present, and the dollar index is cruising through the 100 level. Whatever about the USA not raising rates as many times as the market has predicted, they're still likely to raise rates more than everywhere else. And I think that's the primary reason why the dollar remains really quite steady. When we then think about the wider stock market, I think it's important to pay attention to some of the smaller caps. We've seen very acute declines for stocks, and the Russell 2000 had been quite steady, and it's now beginning to rally from the 2000 level. Now it looks like a type 2 top formation with a massive reaction against the prevailing trend and a distribution below the 200-day moving average, and it is firming within the range. So we certainly need to see it sustain a move back above the 200-day moving average in order to demonstrate that the lows can hold and that demand is returning to dominance beyond some short covering. There's this conflict right now in the markets where there's been the conditioning of the last decade for people to buy the dip. And every time there's been a good size dip, buying has resulted in new highs, and it's been an ideal time to accumulate positions. Against that background, you are the other side of that equation. You have people that are willing to sell into rallies because they want to take profits because monetary and fiscal policy are tightening, and that's going to weigh on asset prices generally. So those are two very competing ways of thinking about the market. And it suggests to me at least that we're going to have a bounce, and then subsequently we'll start to see selling pressure mounting once more. And that will probably remain to be the case for most markets until we see some clear evidence that there is demand for bonds starting to come back in, and that the central banks of the world are going to relent and stop talking about squeezing until something very clearly breaks. You have James Bullard talking over the weekend about raising rates by 75 basis points. So there's definitely a market in the world today for the most aggressive, hawkish central banker. But the reality is that there's just no real conception of how interest rate sensitive the economy is. I had a meeting over the weekend. It was one of these Zoom calls. It was with a solar company, and they pitched me to install solar panels on my roof. And the real carrot is the level of financing they're offering. They're offering 1.49% on a 25-year loan. Well, 20-year yields are over 3%, 30-year yields are almost 3%, which means that this company is borrowing money at high levels, lending it at low levels, and they're hoping to fund it with operations. And they're praying that interest rates don't rise aggressively in the interim. Now, this borrowing on the short end, lending on the long end, this is one of the primary factors where you pick up a negative spread that contributed to the financial crisis. Now, the scale of activity in the repo market at the time was higher than it is now. But the one thing that's very clear is that the buy now, pay later phenomenon has also bred a lot of demand for interest-free financing. And a lot of these loans come with 12-month guarantees. So there's going to either be defaults or payments starting to come through a year from now. They're probably already starting to come into the economy. There'll be even more in 2023 and 2024. And that suggests that people are starting now to live beyond their means. And ultimately, there's going to be a comeuppance at some point in the future. Now, that's why I think it's particularly relevant to monitor the consistency of trends now. And when we have markets that look like top formations, we can't just rationalize it. It's got to then really rally impressively to break out of those topping patterns. Otherwise, we have to conclude that the market's rolling over. And this is certainly something that is relevant for a number of the US and European indices. We've seen a lot of trend deterioration and the consistency characteristics of uptrends being breached over the course of the last 6 months. And that's not at all unusual ahead of a deeper pullback, particularly when monetary policy is tightening. So quantitative tightening hasn't even begun yet, and the total assets of central banks on their balance sheets has already contracted by 500 billion, and it's going to contract by more. So that is sucking liquidity out of the market. It's going to contribute to a deflationary scare. And when central banks eventually do relent, then the size of their balance sheets will probably have to double in order to compensate for that growth scare, and asset prices will respond accordingly. But we're not out of this medium-term correction just yet, and I anticipate that there will be more volatility. There'll be big swings both up and down before we come out of this corrective phase. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.